Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football as we do every day at this time with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, you can start texting those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Try to get to your questions before we let John go. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are
you?
Better than Wednesday, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, you're much clearer to us.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, what happened yesterday is that things were a little crazy because of the basketball game. And so we ended up having to do it on the cell, even though I was sitting here next to the ISDN line. But, you know, things moved so fast in that Cougar game that we didn't have a time to make that switch.
Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, we made it happen, John. That's what you do, though.
Oh, yeah. You got to, let's put it this way. In a week like this, you've got to be able to scramble. Mar is one of the best at being able to scramble, was able to do that. And I try to just get out there and, you know, scramble my own eggs.
That's, you scrambled your eggs. She scrambled, put it all together. Everybody made it happen. It's a team effort here. Hey, what can you tell us about what's going on with Josh Gordon? This story came out right as we were getting on the air here. Yeah. But he's been suspended indefinitely again after the NFL rescinded his conditional reinstatement. What do we know about this?
We don't know anything. I mean, all we know is that he then must have tested positive for something. You know, I don't know if it was a reaction to the fact that, you know, he was conditionally reinstated but not allowed to go on the field, and so he was still allowed to work in the building and at least do some different training type of things. But maybe what ended up happening is that he ended up taking some kind of a drug and getting a positive test, because now with that positive test, that puts him back on the suspended list indefinitely, and, you know, could signal what might be the end of his career.
Yeah, you know, John, we were going back and looking at the year that he had in 2012, mm-hmm. I believe it was, or 13. Three different quarterbacks threw to him. Jason Campbell.
None of them any good.
Brandon Whedon. Ooh. and Brian Hoyer. And went Jason Campbell 8, Brandon Whedon 5, Brian Hoyer 3. He had 1,646 in yardage and 9 touchdowns. I mean, the guy was just incredible, and it doesn't seem like I haven't heard anything about him as far as physically losing a step or anything like that. It's just this.
Yeah, it is. And the one time that I saw that he slowed down a little bit was when I went to Cleveland's camp when he was in Cleveland and he first got there. And apparently, at that point, he had dabbled a little bit into alcohol. And, I was looking at him and said, God, is he fat? I mean, he looked like he was about 20 pounds heavier. Because I still remember when I saw him as a rookie with Cleveland and, just marveled at what I saw as just a great specimen. Now, again, his rookie year, he was so raw that, you know, he didn't really have the game down. But that second year, he was phenomenal. And again, I mean, you're talking about a Pro Bowl talent. I mean, you're talking about a great talent. But unfortunately, you know, the off-the-field problems. Because what are we up to now? 9 suspensions?
I think it's 8.
Is 8 or 9, yeah. And it's like, it's like at some point you realize it's like, okay, I know last year was tough because he lost his brother, and that, you know, led him down the wrong path. Whatever it is this year, it's led him down the wrong path, and it's sad because, you know, he could have really helped this team, but more than anything else, he could have really helped himself.
Well, and I'm looking at his Twitter page, and he's tweeted 2 things in the last 2 hours. He says, 2021, I got you, as if, you know, 21's going to be his year. And then later he tweeted, wasn't this old news? So figure out what he's inferring with the tweets. But you just root for the guy because John, by all accounts, he's a great person. The teammates loved him. The coaches loved him. He was far from a problem as an individual. And he's just somebody struggling with a disease that clearly he is yet to get a grip on.
Yeah, and I still remember, I think I was one of the first, if not the first guy to interview him, or first person to interview him in the locker room once we had a midweek open locker room. And he was just great. I mean, gracious to deal with. I mean, it wasn't as if he remembered, you know, going back all those years when he was a rookie and me interviewing him. But
I'm sure he did.
Oh, maybe not.
Yeah, it's the professor.
Yeah, I know. So it's like maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But again, he was a really good interview. And you can just see, you know, how joyous he was for being able to get on this team. And he really struck up a good relationship with Russell Wilson.
Mm. Yeah. So, hey, by the way, John, this is kind of a off-the-cuff shot here. Somebody texted in about the NBA expanding. to make up for some of the lost revenue. Mm-hmm. What about the NFL? Do you see ever?
No.
Never, ever?
No.
Not in 50 years?
Out of your mouth.
Well, no, because you know here's the deal, is that if you expand, eventually those new teams will then get an equal share of the big money that they get from television. And you know, so they like the idea of 32 teams. They like the idea that you have, you know, eight divisions with four teams in each division. It works out well for the schedule. And certainly, you know, it's a $16 billion business, which, of course, wasn't $16 billion this year because of the pandemic. But, you know, sure, you can get, you know, money coming in from the billions it's going to take to get those expansion teams. And, of course, that's nice. But in the end, you know, with the money coming so much from television, I just don't envision doing it. And, again, if they do expand, it's going to be maybe international type expansion, you know, getting a team over in London and and it's like, do we really want that?
No. We don't want that, John.
That is a long flight.
Yeah, I hate that idea. John, what do we know about Arthur Smith, who is now the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons?
Done a nice job. I mean, you know, it's interesting to see how fast rising some of these guys are. I mean, what was it, in 2011, he was just just worked in the back office, doing little things, and he's made that fast rise. And so last year when he took over as the offensive coordinator after Matt LaFleur left, I mean, he did such a great job in, you know, reinvigorating the running game, you know, restoring the career of Ryan Tannehill, and he carried it over this year. I mean, to think that, you knew he had a great chance to get a head coaching job when he went out and was able to get that team and the offense into the AFC Championship game when nobody expected, and he did it as a wild card. And so the offense kept getting good. They ran the ball well. They passed the ball well. And that apparently impressed, you know, the owner to be able to go hire him as the coach before they get the general manager. It appears that they're probably going to end up taking Terry Fontenot from the New Orleans Saints and hiring him as the GM. But I think it's an interesting hire because, you know, every year you're going to have, you know, a hot coach who is done well, and he right now became that hot offensive coach where Robert Saleh was the hot defensive coach. And so now we'll see how the rest of the jobs go, but it's starting to fill up pretty fast.
Well, John, how did they get Robert Saleh cash? I mean, there were other places. I mean, I'm assuming when this whole thing started, he had pretty much, he was the number one candidate, was he not?
Him or Bieniemy, it seemed like.
Yeah, and right now I'm worried about Eric Bieniemy. I think right now the chances are he's not going to get a head coaching job, which I think is a shame.
Is he not? Is that because we hear about guys who are great candidates, but then once it's all done and they don't get a job, that we always hear, they didn't interview very well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I know you talk to coaching agents and they tell you, it's like, hey, when you're Eric Bieniemy and you've had as many interviews as he's had for the years, you don't have a coaching job. Some of that has to be how you do in the interviews. But I know I've interviewed him. He's, you know, way open. I mean, he's a good guy, a good coach. Players like him, all those different things. But, something is amiss. And, obviously in the case of Jacksonville, and again, it's sometimes different preferences, you know, Bieniemy, because again, you can maybe see some way he could end up in Philadelphia, but the problem he faces right now, he's on the Kansas City Chiefs, and there's no way to get him the job until their seasons are over, as far as the teams in the playoffs. And so, you know, figuring the Chiefs have a good chance to go to the Super Bowl, that means he'll have almost no chance unless, let's say, for example, the Eagles want him, okay? And right now the Eagles have John Dorsey working as a consultant. Well, I mean, they can make the job offer to Eric Bieniemy and then, try to say, okay, he's going to be the coach, and then have John Dorsey go out and get the assistant coaches that he wants. But if you're going to wait to the Super Bowl, you're not going to have any kind of a good staff at all because you're getting everything picked over. So, yeah, right now, you know, with the three jobs closing, four still open, Houston wanted to interview him, but they're so screwed up, they put the interview request in 1 or 2 days after that deadline that you needed to interview anybody that's...
Of course they did.
Yeah, and again, you know, even today, Cal McNair, who's been screwing up probably more than any other owner we've seen, you know, maybe since Donald Sterling, McNair ended up going out and saying, I apologize. I know I said I was going to keep, Deshaun Watson in the loop, and I didn't, and that's on me. And it's like, I'll take the blame for some of the bad things. But, of course, I mean, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. They have a GM, but right now they don't have a coach. One name that I keep hearing Don't know if it's true, but I think they could hire Jim Caldwell. Sure sounds like Dan Campbell from New Orleans is going to probably go to the Detroit Lions because, you know, basically they put in a request for Todd Bowles. And I think when Todd found out that it looks like Campbell's going to be the job, he pulled his name out. And Salah, you know, pulled his name out of Detroit because, you know, he was getting the job in with the New York Jets.
Yeah, I just worry, I guess, a little bit about him because he is such a good coach, but the Jets, I feel like they just screw things up. And,
and
you know, I guess I haven't said that about Urban Meyer because I feel like the same thing in Jacksonville, but I don't know. I was surprised. I just thought that he would end up somewhere where it was a better situation.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, that's the one thing is, what are the better situations? I mean, I think the Chargers are real good situations because you get, you know, some talent on that team and Justin Herbert at quarterback. And then, you know, I still think Atlanta is a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you want. I mean, I still think they'll keep Matt Ryan, although it's not 100%, and I still think they'll keep Julio Jones. But they've got a lot of cap work that's going to be a problem, not as bad as, say, Philadelphia. And, of course, the talent level on Jacksonville is so bad. And what I worry about with Urban Meyer is that you know, here's a guy that if you go back to 2000, you know, the failures double the amount of success stories when you take a guy from college and put him in the NFL. I mean, I think there's only been like four coaches out of the last 12 hired since 2000 that came from college to the NFL that succeeded. And, you know, I didn't include Pete Carroll because Pete Carroll had such a long experience coaching in the NFL. And you include Jim Harbaugh, who, you know, was a quarterback for, what, 15 years and had been a quarterback coach in the league.
Yeah.
And so it's like he knows the NFL. And I, you know, you include Chip Kelly, who, say what you want, he had a winning record, but he was not a winner as far as being a college coach making the transition.
Right. Well, and we were talking about Bobby Petrino is another one. Nick Saban.
Nick Saban.
Well,
Lou Holtz.
Remember, Nick Saban worked on Bill Belichick's staff.
Oh, yeah.
So he has NFL experience. So it's not
so
like.
So he doesn't count.
No, he doesn't count because, again, he at least has been on an NFL staff, I mean, in a prominent position. So, so it's like, no, you don't include him, just like you don't include Pete Carroll. And, you know, and here's the thing I heard a little bit today about Urban Meyer. And I'll ask you this, Dave. He is one that pushes the limit on the players. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by pushing the limit, he wants everything out of them in practice. And he is hard line, kind of like Tom Coughlin. How do you think that's going to go over nowadays?
Yeah, see, and Tom Coughlin was that way. Even I didn't like him even when they were in expand. My last year in the league was the first year that Jacksonville and Carolina came in, and we went and played Jacksonville down there in the preseason. And I remember hearing all the stories from guys about how they had to sit with their hands in their laps at meetings. They couldn't wear any jewelry into meetings. And then, yeah, he was just a hard-nosed guy. This is just a quick, stupid story, but I went walking past him, and he was walking down the hallways outside of the locker room, and he had these really ugly pants on. They were like plaid and like a, pastel. And so, and he was walking, and then he had his coaches, like, it was like they were military. They were like two by two walking behind him.
Walking in lockstep with each other.
Yeah. And I said, hey, there's not a jacket that goes with those pants, is there? And one of his coaches who was back there was like giggling, trying to hide it but he just was like,
he didn't find it funny.
He gave me this look like, who are you? And, you know, I mean, I just, that doesn't work in the NFL.
No.
Because, you know, you have to have guys, it's like what Mike Tomlin said, we need volunteers, not hostages. I mean,
yeah.
Look, every guy can whoop your butt. You need respect from a different way. You're not going to do it by being a hard guy and trying to intimidate somebody. And that's kind of what he was like. So we'll see if Urban Meyer does that. That's the thing that makes it not work in the NFL, in my opinion, is that, you know, look, I'm a grown-up now. I'm not, you know, your college student. I'm getting paid well. And I can whoop your tail. And so, look, you need to find a different way to get respect.
Yeah, I still remember Tom Coughlin when he passed out all the rules for his coaches and scouts and that, is that you're not allowed to wear sunglasses. You have to stand on this side of the field if you're going to be watching practice. And there are so many rules. And, of course, you know the rules for a player. It's like, here's their meeting time. And if you show up 5 minutes, you have to be there 5 minutes before the meeting, no matter what the meeting time is. And if you didn't, then you get fined.
Right.
Yeah. If you're 3 minutes early, you're considered late.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like he's that strict. And then, you know, he did have a great coaching career down in Jacksonville, did a good job with the New York Giants. But then when he went back to Jacksonville to kind of run the front office and that, I mean, you saw the damage of how many players wanted out of there for some of the things that he was demanding through the coaching staff to have happen.
John, back to the Jets for a minute. I was watching something yesterday with Schefter, and I can't remember who he was talking to, but they were talking about the Jets and the idea that they're going to hang on to Sam Darnold and look to trade that second overall pick. What do you think of that?
It's not a bad idea but of course, that's the thing that probably is even a test Urban Meyer, because when you're thinking about it, it's like, okay, you know, everybody knows Trevor Lawrence is considered to be the best quarterback to come out in years. Well, guess what? Who did he coach in college? Justin Fields. So what if he takes Justin Fields, which would be a mistake, over Trevor Lawrence, and all of a sudden Lawrence is available with the number two pick? You got to take that and then trade Sam Darnold. But, you know, I'd have to think at the moment, and I know when I was calling back to the Jets about a little over a week ago, that they seem to be mixed on whether the second pick in the draft, if it's not Trevor Lawrence, should be a quarterback. Because, you know, Fields didn't have a great regular season, showed a lot of guts in the bowl games, and shows he's going to be a pretty good quarterback. But is he worth the number two pick when you got a wide receiver or a tackle that, you know, stands out as being good? And I know that you know, the BYU quarterback, you know, he's on the rise, but to a point where is he really the number two quarterback or the number two player in this draft?
Looks like Wade Phillips saying it as only Wade Phillips could say it. I'm retiring from retirement. Sounds like he wants to get back out. That sounds like something he would say. Definitely.
Yeah, but he's wanted to get a job all season long. And at one point he was talking to Philadelphia. He was willing to be a consultant for them. In the end, that didn't work out. But no, he's been advocating and being driven crazy by not coaching. And by the way, Dave Wyman.
Yo.
You didn't mention this yesterday.
Uh-oh.
On the Steelers?
What'd I miss?
Keith Butler was retained.
Oh. Well, I just assumed he would be. Since he has such a good
defense. He deserved it, yeah. But
so what did they give him, a new contract?
No. I mean, he's still under contract, but they didn't fire him. They fired, you know, the offensive coordinator, the wide receiver coach, and the tight end coach, and I think one offensive line coach.
Oh.
But, you know, Keith Butler was able to keep his job.
Well, I'll have to send him a text saying, glad you survived. Holy smokes. I mean, they've done a good job there defensively, right? It just, what a weird meltdown there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we saw a little bit of that here on a different basis, on a one-game basis.
Yeah, I posed this question, John. What if it had happened opposite? So that, you know, the first half of the season, the Seahawk offense was really bad, and the second half they were really, really good. And then vice versa on defense, if it had started off really, really good and ended really bad. I mean, obviously, I don't know, would they be 12-4? You know, would they have won that game against the Rams? There's all kinds of questions. But, I mean, for a while there, it was all about firing the defensive coordinator, and then it became the offensive coordinator there.
Yeah, and of course, he ends up getting fired, and now what Charger solution seems to be the best? I did have to research this a little bit, too, but had to go back into Anthony Lynn's background. He did call plays for Buffalo back particularly in 2016, and in that year, I think they finished ninth in rushing league-wide, and LeSean McCoy ended up getting something like 1,243 yards.
Okay.
And so, you know, and his philosophy is running the football. Now, is there enough variety in his play calls to be able to make it work right? Or would you be better to go with a Pep Hamilton, the quarterback coach who has a long reputation of working with quarterbacks as a quarterback coach or as a wide receiver coach and then calling plays and also doing a good job in the XFL being a head coach who is calling the plays?
Yeah, I kind of, to me, he's the guy that, at least from what everybody's saying about him, that sounds the best to me, Pep Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously.
You know what I also like about Pep? Sorry to interrupt, that's my bad. But it's like he also has a recent experience, maybe not in the last couple of years, of being in college. And I think that's one of the keys to some of these new coaches. Because if you have some coaches, and I know that this is an Andy Reid thing. I mean, one of the things that he did on his staff to stay fresh with the offensive schemes is get guys who had NFL experience but also had dipped into college to be able to coach, so they can bring out and give some of the new stuff like the RPOs and all the little changes in the offense that teams are now copying and bringing into the NFL. And I think that, you know, Anthony would not have that. Pep Hamilton would have that.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, he started off at Howard, then the Jets, San Francisco, Chicago, and then, of course, he went to the great Stanford University. But he's also in Michigan, and I'm assuming that was there with Jim Harbaugh because he had him at Stanford. So, yeah, he sounds like he'll be a good one.
Yeah, and I let's put it this way. We all know that Anthony Lynn is a great person. He's respected, good coach, all those different things. But I don't know. I mean, maybe the resume of Anthony Lynn looks better, particularly that he's been a running back coach and a running type offense. But I think, to me, I'm leaning toward Pep Hamilton, even though he wasn't the head coach.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I like what he did, you know, obviously at Stanford with Andrew Luck. But like you said, John, I saw the same thing. I mean, Anthony Lynn had one season of play calling.
Yeah.
And you said they were number 9 in the run, right?
Yeah, number 9 in the run.
That's pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, well, maybe. It just depends on what the fit is and what Russ thinks and what Pete thinks. And, oh, by the way, maybe John Schneider as well.
Yeah.
We thought it was kind of funny the way that Russ said that. He was like, yeah, me and Pete and John, too.
It's nice to include John. Hey, John, do you think there's going to be restructuring of contracts, most notably Bobby Wagner and or Russell Wilson?
I think they probably want to stay away from doing Russell because, you know, it's so tough with his agent, Mark Rogers. And, you know, you figure if you do a contract extension or just even a redo with Russell. Now, again, if you go to Russell and you say, okay, if we do this, here's what we're going to end up doing with the roster to make it better, then he might go for it. Because, again, say what you want about Russell. I mean, he's dictated a lot of different things. Like, for example, the smartest thing that he did, and it was, you know, of course, even better for the Seahawks that he did it, is that, listen, I want this thing done before the OTAs because I don't want to be concentrating on contract and waiting till training camp to get something done, where I think the Seahawks probably wanted to do the contract at training camp. But he talked them into it, and they get a good deal at $35 million. He became the highest-paid quarterback, and he put all that stuff behind and then concentrated on, you know, getting guys together on the offensive side of the ball before OTAs, working with them on a very close level, and really developing tight relationships. And so, you know, I think that, you know, if you can convince him to redo without getting more money, and he knows what you're going to get in return, that might happen. I think Bobby probably would be the easier one to do because, again, you know, Bobby's going to be doing the contract, not an agent, and a tough agent.
It feels like they don't have a choice. I mean, if they have so many guys that are unrestricted free agents, that if they're putting if they're putting a priority on bringing a number of them back, I don't know with what they've got in salary cap room. How they can get
it's
it
like
done without
million if it's 175, but it's not as bad as you think because, I mean, if you want to think about some bad ones, look at San Francisco with the 27 free agents that they have. You know, they have 40 guys that are either restricted exclusive rights or free agents. And, you know, to a point where, you know, Richard Sherman just looked at the list and says, well, I'm not going to be back. He says they're going to pay Trent Williams. They'll pay Kyle Juszczyk, and they'll also try to take care of Fred Warner, the linebacker, and it's like there'll be no room for me. That's why I'm curious to see if Richard would follow Robert Saleh and go to the Jets, which would be perfect for Robert because you get a player who's still at a high level of play, even though he's hurt this year, and he coaches up his cornerbacks on a team right now that doesn't have hardly anything at cornerback. But what I wonder is that, you know, Richard has spent his entire life on the West Coast. I think he still lives here in Maple Valley, and I don't know if he'd want to go all the way to New York.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 until 11. You were taking your phone calls.
8 to 11,
Dave Grosby at 10:30.
And what?
Dave Grosby at 10:30.
And Dave Grosby at 10:30. There you go. It's a packed show tomorrow, so call into the John Clayton Show. Otherwise, we'll talk to you on Monday, John.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, we haven't had one of these in a while because Dave's been giving us three players to watch instead, but story time is back, and it's coming up next here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.